My partner at the time was driving and I was on the back of the scooter. We're riding along the coast. The ocean is to our right. There's some beautiful buildings overlooking the ocean to my left. And then suddenly, I think I hear it before anything else happened, this crunch. And accompanied by the crunch is a white light.
On this episode, we're going to talk about what it feels like to go head-to-head with a vehicle while on a scooter, the importance of protective gear on two-wheeled vehicles, and what it feels like to have your toenail completely ripped off. Ah, jeez. Anyone catch the license plate of that truck?
You're listening to the Travel Horror Stories Podcast, a show that listens to real stories from travel bloggers and travelers just like you. Then we unpack those stories to discuss safety tricks, prevention treats, horror hacks, and follow-up tactics. The goal is to turn travel nightmares into dreams of beaches, sunshine, and margaritas.
And as always, you can head over to TravelHorrorStoriesPodcast.com for this and all the previous episodes, their show notes, and links to all the other places you enjoy listening to podcasts. If you're listening via Apple Podcasts, don't forget to give the episode a 5-star rating and leave a comment, because that will help more people find the show.
And now, live from the Rudderless Travel Studio in downtown Toronto, Canada, here's your host, Christopher Rudder!
The weather outside is perfect, my friends. We just got out of some really humid weather, and we are enjoying that sun is shining, sky is blue, gentle, refreshing breeze type of weather. I recently bought a kick scooter and I've been out riding around, just literally going wherever the wind blows. It's that type of weather. It's absolutely gorgeous. But you know what? What's making it even better is that the Friday that just passed marked the beginning of phase one here in Ontario. So now we are officially allowed to eat and drink on patios. And as a bonus, the Euro 2020 that got postponed has kicked off. So picture this. We got perfect weather. Patios are open. I can enjoy a beer and a soccer game at the same time. This is a dream. Absolutely perfect. Today is a Nora Dunn day. So, you know, every fifth episode, I have Nora Dunn with me. And for some reason, she makes me just go like way off topic, off the rails. That's just what happens. And then I just end up rambling on about random stuff. But the weather is good. I'm glad you guys are here hanging out with us. Before I bring Nora in, because she's waiting in the background like, let me at him. This whole idea of having Nora come for the every fifth episode was based on a blog post that she wrote, called Traveling Isn't All Roses and Lollipops, I believe it's called.
That's right. Yep.
That's right. One of my favorite blog posts. It shows her off-the-cuff kind of personality, her fun side. And when I was reading that, I was like, oh my gosh, like, she has enough stories here for me to do like 5 episodes here. So I reached out to good old Nora. And of course, Nora's game. She's always game for these kind of things. And so that's where we're at. So we're just literally going through some of the stories that are from that blog post. So we talked about natural disasters. So she was a part of the Australian bushfires. We talked about relationships that, you know, went horribly wrong because, you know, traveling with your significant other, you know, is obviously a horror story in itself at the best of times. And we talked about hospital visits and being sick and those kind of things. I keep wanting to say gangrene, but that's not what it is.
Not as far as I know, anyway.
Yeah, well, I mean, you still have limbs. So what was it called? It was
dengue.
Dengue. That's it. Dengue fever. Dengue. So with me in the rudderless ship for today, returning once again and commandeering my ship as usual, is Miss Nora Dunn from The Professional Hobo. How are you doing, Nora?
Well, apparently I'm in the wings going, blah, blah, blah.
Let me add it.
Apparently I've got gremlin roots that are eager to take over your podcast. Other than that, I'm fine. Thank you for asking.
Don't drop her in the swimming pool. Hence, gremlin reference. circa 19, what year did Gremlins come out? 80s? Is that an 80s something. Movie?
Yes.
Yeah, 80s something. Yeah, look it up. It's a great movie. Okay. Let's see.
Are you even old enough to remember that movie?
I have no idea. I vaguely remember people talking about Gremlins.
Yeah, you watched it after the fact. You were like born after that movie came out, I think. Or you were like maybe a year or two.
Well after the time that movie came out, I was born. I mean, I don't know even where that came from. I think I read about it somewhere and just thought I'd throw it in the show. But you're right. I have absolutely no idea what this movie's about because I wasn't born when the movie was released. So tell us about yourself.
I feel old.
No, you don't look a day over 35.
No. And you're supposed to say 25, but that's okay. I'll give it to you.
Oops. My bad. For those who don't know, I mean, if you've been listening to the first three episodes, then you know all about who Nora Dunn is, the fabulous Nora Dunn. But for those who are listening to this episode for the very first time, who is Nora Dunn and what is the professional hobo?
Nora Dunn is a woman, a worldly woman, who prefers to talk about herself in the third person. Today, she's going to tell you how she sold everything she owned and traveled the world full-time for 12 years, and continues to travel the world, pandemics notwithstanding, for about 6 months of every year. Nora Dunn is me. That's me. And I am the professional hobo. So a quick story, something I haven't shared in the past about why I think I haven't shared this about why I started calling myself the professional hobo. When I sold everything I owned to travel the world, I was like a financial planner. I was a medium-sized fish in a big pond in Toronto, Canada. And I was interviewed in newspapers and I did TV appearances and stuff, all talking about money and, you know, like looking, I don't know, good about money. And then I decided to sell everything, which no colleague in my office understood. They were all like, what? You're going to do what? My manager was like, okay, he said, I knew something was up with you, but here's what we're going to do. I'll get someone to take care of your practice for you, and you can go off and you can like dig latrines in Africa, and you could just get whatever travel stuff out of your system that you want to get out of your system, and you could come back because you're such a good financial planner. He didn't actually say that last part, but I intuited that. And I was like, no, you know what? I really need to take off and I really need to like cut all my ties so that I can leave myself open to experience whatever it is that the world has to show me in this open-ended lifestyle that, you know, back in the pioneer days of 2006 didn't really exist as a thing. I kind of felt like I was the first person ever to do this, but apparently I'm not entirely the first person to do this, but, you know, I was the first in the recent trend of digital nomads and such people.
You're definitely one of the few.
The problem is I didn't have I went from being a former professional financial tycoon chick to nothing. To like, I don't know what I am. I don't know what I'm doing. I don't know where I'm going. I don't know who I am. I don't know what life means. And, but what I was before I left to travel was a Rotarian, and I still am to this day. And Rotary is not a cult, and it's not, just in case anyone thinks it is, it's actually a worldwide organization dedicated to providing services to help people of the world. It's almost single-handedly responsible for eradicating polio around the world, as an example. So, but it's mostly business people. Right, so I actually attended Rotary meetings as I started traveling as a form of cultural exchange. However, in North America, as with many parts of the world, what's the first person you ask someone when you're getting to know them at a cocktail party? What do you do? So that was the question I got, and I was like, I'm homeless, I'm jobless, I'm careerless. So what did I answer their questions with? I said, I'm a professional hobo. And I'm like, okay, I need to make this look good. So I said it to make fun of myself, but ultimately it stuck. And something like 13 years later, here I am, theprofessionalhobo.com. And it has even more meaning beyond having made fun of myself. But I will save that for another episode. Remind me to tell you in the next episode why the term professional hobo is even more poetic than I ever could have imagined.
Wow. Okay, so, I mean, I knew about the rotary
and
stuff.
Now we're out of time. Goodbye.
Thank you. Thank you for tuning in. Thank you for listening. We'll catch you next, in the next couple of weeks. You want to play a game?
Sure. I always want to play a game.
All right. So last time I checked, I had to double check with you before we sat down together. So I'm two. I have two and you have one. I think that's the score. So the goal is for me to maintain my lead. So we're going to play three stories, two truths, one lie. You're going to give me three stories. Two of them are going to be true. One of them is going to be a lie. I'm going to try to guess which one is a lie. The last episode that we did together, it was you. Yeah, you came with some good game there, I have to admit. So let's see how you do this time.
All right. Not only do I not know what truths or slight mistruths I told in previous episodes, but I also don't know what I've told you as a person. And I'm pretty sure you already know some or not all of these things about me. So, but I'm gonna pray that you're feeling a little amnesiac today. And
amnesia, an abbreviation, you know.
Yeah, potato, potato. So I've chosen a theme. I've begun to realize that I need to do this in themes. And the theme of this week is music.
Oh, no.
So here are my three stories. The first of which is, by the age of 10, I was a concert pianist. Okay. The second story is, I toured China with a ballet as the lead flautist. And the third story is, I appear in a Steven Spielberg-produced Hollywood movie, singing and dancing.
What the f***?
Ooh, you swore! Is that allowed?
Well, I usually just beep it out. Don't get carried away, because it just means I need to do a lot of beeping. okay, let's see. But every now and then I'll do it for dramatic effect, and then I will just beep it out. But this is a family show. No. Let's see. I'm looking around your apartment to see if I see a piano in there. And for some reason, I just feel that you're not a piano, a penis. You're not.
Yeah, this is not a kid's show.
Oh my gosh.
Come clearly, on, little
you're
Johnny,
a female.
Listen to Travel Stories, Horror Stories Podcast. It'll be fun.
Oh my gosh. Oh wow. Okay. I know that you've had a life in entertainment. I really have no clue how one person could manage to fit so many different things into one life. I really don't know. Financial planner to, like, you've been on TV. You've been like you've done a lot of things. So I'm just going to say that all the other stuff that has to do with you being on public stuff is probably true. And I'm going to go and say that the piano is a lie.
Damn it. You're right. But I have to tell you, I played piano really, really well. Both of my parents are piano teachers. And and by the age of 10, I played piano in concerts. But I don't know if you would call me a concert pianist. Like, people didn't pay to come and hear me play. So much as I performed in concerts in major concert halls, but really as just part of the do you call the student body of the Royal Conservatory of Music.
Wow. Oh my gosh.
So it's kind of true.
Yeah,
it
is.
But it's not quite.
My gosh. Like.
And you know what the irony is? Both my parents were piano teachers, but neither of them taught me to play piano.
Really?
So we tried.
You taught yourself?
No, I'm not that good.
I was about to say, is there anything this woman can't do?
They actually paid good money to send me to another piano teacher. The reason being, we try.
Because they don't have the patience to deal with you?
Yeah, 100%.
I was just 100%. Kidding.
No, this is the thing. When a parent tries to teach their child and it relates to their profession, it almost never goes well because the child doesn't take the parent and their authority around the topic seriously, and the parents are conversely too hard on the children because they set higher expectations than they would of their students. After hair-ripping, tear-jerking fights with both of my parents trying to teach me to play piano, we all decided that for the good of our family, I would study piano with somebody else.
Yeah. Wow. That's hilarious.
This also has nothing to do with travel. Thank you and goodbye. I'm out.
Hilarious. But the other ones do.
This is
the
true.
The other two stories do. So elaborate a little bit on those two stories. And keep in mind that we are heading towards an iceberg, just so you know.
This is true. All right. So the quick version of the long story of both stories is the ballet. I was 16 years old, maybe 17. I was invited along with this project that was associated with my school. I went to a performing arts high school where the music, of course, right? Where the music teacher was writing a ballet. So it was literally an original piece of work, and he put the orchestra together, and he hired me to be the flautist, and we spent 3 weeks going through China. That was well and truly, I mean, the travel bug had planted itself firmly in my being prior to that, but the experience of traveling through China for 3 weeks, and let me tell you, this trip was not smooth by any stretch of the imagination, but the experience of doing that kind of sealed my fate as a traveler and for my passion for travel.
That's amazing. Oh my gosh.
Yeah, it was an incredible experience. And my best friend was one of the dancers. So we got to travel around China together. And it was a very special
How old were you at that time?
16.
Wow, that's awesome. Oh my gosh. Okay, and the other story was Steven Spielberg.
So Steven Spielberg executive produced a movie called The Prize Winner of Defiance, Ohio. It's a terrible name, which is why it didn't do very well. Actually, no. The reason it didn't do very well in theaters is because it wasn't a chick flick. So, like, nobody fell in love, so it wasn't a chick flick. And nothing got blown up, so it wasn't a guy flick. Instead, it was based on a true story about a woman in the 1950s who raised a family of 10 children by contesting. So basically you write the jingles for the next, you know, product thing, and you win like a washing machine or $3,000.
Wow.
It starred Julianne Moore, Woody Harrelson, and Laura Dern. And I was singing and dancing as a reoccurring theme throughout about 10 minutes in the middle of the movie. The first time you see me, I'm dancing with a 10-foot sandwich.
Oh my gosh.
Because that's how I roll.
Oh my gosh. And you're also in the TV show too. What was the one with the guy with the dog?
Kung Fu, the legend continues.
Yes, that's it. Yeah. Oh my gosh. So you had like a TV career. Like, what the hell, man? How'd you accomplish all this? And you're like only 25. How did you do all this stuff within, you know, oh my gosh. Wow. Okay. That's incredible.
I've been a busy girl.
Wow. Oh my gosh. Okay. That's awesome.
You're very good. You're very good at this. They should give you a podcast, you know.
Maybe. I think they're still trying to determine whether they should let me keep this one. Okay.
I'm just trying to figure out who they are.
I don't know. That's what you said. I'm just rolling with you. Okay.
That's a very bad idea. Here comes the iceberg.
What would you do if, while riding on the back of a scooter in Granada, an SUV swerves into your lane and hits you head on? Take us to before and then. and then accident, and then afterwards. Yes.
All right. Excellent. So we shall start on the lovely, idyllic Caribbean island of Grenada.
Ooh,
now close your eyes and picture a Caribbean island. Palm trees swaying in the wind, light reggae coming to you on the breeze while you sip your rum drink with a little umbrella in it and listen to the ocean waves gently lapping the shore. That was my life in Grenada. I was, after dengue fever anyway, because I'd already had dengue fever and I decided to stay. So there must have been something to keep me on this delightful island. And the somethings were many that encouraged me to stay on the island. It was really kind of one thing that led to another and to another that ultimately led me to deciding that I wanted to use Grenada as a base for quite some time. Not the least of which influential factors included having a relationship while I was in Grenada. So we were living together, and I had, among other things, a scooter. Now, mine wasn't a kick scooter, but I really do find it quite ironic and interesting and coincidental that you should actually open up the show talking about how you bought a kick scooter. Wow. Because now I'm about to tell the horror story that relates to having a scooter.
Oh, no. Fantastic. Let me look for my receipt. Can I still return it? Okay, carry on.
So the story goes something like this. I was really enjoying having a scooter. If we want to talk about former lives, I probably shouldn't share this story because I'm sure I could use this in one of the next truth and lies game we play, but I'm going to share it anyway. And that is that I used to own and informally race motorcycles.
What? So,
oh, damn it. I kind of thought I'd already shared that in one of the previous episodes.
Where the hell do you just get this stuff?
I couldn't where do you just that.
Where do you just drop this random stuff from?
I know, isn't it great?
I used to race motorcycles, you know. What the?
So, slight tangent. iceberg coming. Slight tangent on that. So I found, I don't know if you've experienced this as well. I think this is a universal truth, that people, when you go traveling and then you come back home, people will feign interest in your travels. They'll say, oh, what did you do? Tell me all about your trip. But what they really mean is tell it to me in 20 seconds or less and show me no more than 3 pictures.
Yes. Yes. I struggle with that because I just go on and on and on. Yeah.
And apparently so do I. So, but I have learned that people don't actually want to know about your travels for a variety of reasons I won't explore at the current moment. But what I have learned to do is I've learned to interject travel and apparently life experiences as anecdotal nuggets that I just kind of throw in there. Like, so there was that time I was racing motorcycles in Canada and blah, blah, blah happened. And people can either pick up on it and ask me questions about that or not. There was that time I started an international NGO by accident. And I just keep going. And then if they want to ask me about it, they can. So I just dropped a nugget there. There was that time I used to race motorcycles.
Oh my gosh. Okay. I'm going to interject for 1 second. First of all, I would love to know.
This podcast is just a series of interjections.
Yeah, no kidding. but I feel that now I'm really curious, like how much other nuggets are there out there that she still has yet to drop? Like what? Was she once a helicopter pilot? Was she once a fighter jet pilot? Like what else is there? Did she once go to the moon? Is that a nugget? Am I going to be listening to that one day soon? So that's the first
I guess you'll have to wait and see, won't you?
like what other things has she not done? Okay. So the other thing is that I wasn't motorcycle racer, but I do own a motorcycle. And I haven't rode it in a while because my motorcycle was my first vehicle ever. So I rode that thing all the time, like even when it was cold outside, until there was literally snow on the ground. And then I ended up buying a Jeep. As you guys know, I have the Jeep Wrangler. So now that I have the Jeep, I stopped riding the motorcycle because this is what it feels to be inside a vehicle.
Wow. In the cage, then, as we call it.
Yes. And then I still had, I mean, the Jeep is standard, of course, and I could still take off everything. So I still had that feeling of being free, like I do on a motorcycle. But I just want to just plug in there that I also know how to ride a motorcycle. So we have something else in common.
Very cool. All right.
I just thought I'd share that.
We're going to have to talk shop on that a little bit later. Back to our Caribbean panorama. Or diorama or something rama. And my experience, so I have lots of experience on two wheels. But of course, being a good little motorcycle rider as I have been in Canada, I've always been used to wearing full protective gear. Like I used to wear the full leathers and the boots with the sliders on them and the helmet. Although of course I didn't have to wear maybe a full leather suit I was obviously you need that for racing and quite frankly I had no desire to experience road rash in any way shape or form and I know being on two wheels is you know it's one of those things where you know as riders especially in Toronto where there's a lot of traffic and to get out of the city to the fun roads you have to go through a lot of traffic and cars don't see I these days actually I don't think I would ride because everyone's texting while they're driving or they're somehow distracted. At least when I was riding, I will date myself here. When I was riding back in the olden days, people weren't as distracted. They at least had their eyes on the road.
Yeah.
Now, not only do they not have their eyes on the road, they have it on their phones. So
yeah, I agree totally.
I feel like it's a really dangerous proposition in a city, especially like Toronto.
Yeah. Yeah. Agreed.
So, totally. But on an island like Grenada, it was, there's just one lane each way. There are little curvy roads. There's people, or at least weren't at the time, distracted by devices. They were, you know, it was a very easy place to ride.
Right.
And when I got the scooter, I did have a helmet, or at least somebody had lent me a helmet. But I found that because of the heat of the island and just the sheer delight of having the wind in your hair when you're riding, I had no idea how amazing that felt
until I
did it. And once I'd done it a few times, once I'd taken my scooter around a few times without a helmet, that was it. It was me, sandals, a tank top, and no helmet, and a pair of sunglasses. And that was how I rode. And that was how everybody rode, to be perfectly honest. There was one guy who had the same scooter as I did, and he wore a full-face helmet. No one else did. So it's just kind of the thing you do, right? So you can already see where the story is going, I'm sure.
Right. So simply because the laws are different. So here in Canada, you have to wear a helmet. But there you obviously don't have to. So it's a personal choice there. Yeah. Okay. Makes sense.
Yeah, absolutely. Personal choice. It's so easy going in the Caribbean. Like when I first arrived, I had the use of a car and I went out with some local friends of mine. And we were going out for, you know, a bit of a run. We were kind of going all over. It was a Saturday night. And of course, as you do in a place like this, there was drinking going on. So I had decided I was going to have one drink because I knew that I could, you know, stay within my tolerance of doing that. And I asked them, I said, so in Grenada, how much can you drink and drive here? Huh. And they looked at me and they said, well, I don't know. How much can you drink and drive? And I said, no, like, how much am I allowed to drink and then drive? And they said, well, I don't know. How much are you allowed to drink? And we went back and forth like this until finally I realized there were no regulations around this.
Wow.
Drinking and driving is a sport.
Wow.
And another friend of mine who was on another Caribbean island shared a story of how she was pulled over by a cop and she had a joint in the ashtray. A glass of wine in her hand, and she got a ticket for not wearing her seatbelt.
Oh my gosh. Wow.
So I guess this is probably also important in painting the picture for what's about to happen in our little horror story here.
Oh gosh.
Because I've not been drinking, nor am I driving. My partner at the time was driving, and I was on the back of the scooter. He also had not been drinking, but as we were riding along, we're riding along the coast. The ocean is to our right. There's some beautiful buildings overlooking the ocean to my left. And I'm looking anywhere but the road, which of course I could do because I'm a passenger. Mm-hmm. And as I'm looking around and I'm looking at the beautiful sunset view of the bay in Grenada, and then suddenly I think I hear it before anything else happened, this crunch. And accompanied by the crunch is a white light and nothing. And I wake up on the side of the road, and my partner is calling my name and calling my name and calling my name.
Oh my gosh.
And things start to come into focus. I feel like I've just woken up from a nap. I don't know if you've ever lost consciousness, but coming to from losing consciousness is always a very disorienting experience because you don't know where you are, what happened, or why you decided to go to sleep at the side of the road, but apparently I did.
Oh my gosh. Wow.
And he's I don't know, maybe 10 meters away from me, and he's calling out to me, come, Nora, 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 you know, and I'm kind of, ugh. So I crawl over to him, and I realize we've been in an accident. Now, what happened was an SUV had pulled into our lane and hit us head on at full speed.
What? What? Oh, no. Oh.
The story, as we're able to put it together, was that he was making, so they drive on the other side of the road in Grenada. You drive on the left side of the road. So he was making a right turn, which is kind of like the North American equivalent of making a left turn, in that you have to cross oncoming traffic. Right. He had started to make his right turn without looking to see if there was anybody coming and without signaling. Ugh. So we had no warning that he was going to pull out directly in front of us at full speed.
Oh, ta-da!
So I was catapulted, because I was on the back, I was catapulted, I don't know what, 30 feet, then landed on my head. And then apparently, I have no recollection of any of this, right? And then apparently I did a few more somersaults and finished breaking my journey with my from the knees down.
Oh.
So my partner at the time was not nearly as lucky. He basically was crushed by the front of the scooter, which was crushed into him. Now, somehow he ended up off the scooter as well. The scooter was totaled, completely totaled, decimated. And he was lying on the ground. And in the aftermath, we learned that he had fractured his hip and dislocated his femur. So he wasn't moving. I sort of moved him. And we kind of sat there in shock on the side of the road for a while. Now, in a place like Grenada, there's an expression in Grenada, and I'm sure it applies to any small island. On one side of the Grenada is the capital called St. George's. On the other side of the island, the exact opposite side of the island, is another city called Grenville. And the expression goes, fart in St. George's, and someone in Grenville is going to tell you how it smells. So it did not take long for the island to learn that we had been in an accident.
Oh,
the traffic was stopped both ways. And one of our friends, you can never go anywhere in Grenada for very long without seeing somebody you know. Even I, as a foreigner to the island, was rarely more than 2 or 3 degrees of separation to anybody I saw at any time. So one of a friend slowly comes by and looks out the window and sees us sitting at the side of the road, and his jaw absolutely drops. And so we said, please, can you pull over and help us? You're going to need to follow us to the hospital and just help us. So we did. And he hung around. The ambulance came. My friend said, Nora, you're bleeding from your head. And I was like, I was completely out of it. I was in such agonizing, my head didn't hurt so much, but I was in agonizing pain from the knees down, and I was completely ripped up. And I remember being like inordinately thirsty. I was so thirsty. And there's people standing everywhere. They're all just standing there staring at us. And I said, please, somebody, can I have some water? And they all continued to just stand there staring at us. And my partner admonished me for asking. He said, Nora, you don't need water right now. And I was kind of surprised. I'm like, is this a cultural faux pas for me to ask for a bloody sip of water while I'm sitting on the side of the road waiting for an ambulance? I don't know.
Oh my gosh.
To this day, I don't know if that was wrong of me to ask, but I was thirsty.
Wow.
So the good news, the good news was this was a Friday night. Now, normally, going to the hospital on a Friday night in a place such as Grenada would not be such a good thing because the drunken related injuries that people sustain as the night go on are ever increase. However, it was early in the evening. So my partner and I had the emergency room, such as it was, to ourselves.
Wow.
He was in one room and I was in another. They informed me that they had to stitch my head and that they would dress my wounds from the knees down. Now, I kind of have a pathological fear of needles, so the freezing process was really far from delightful for me. But you know what? I can tell you in full honesty now, I would take stitches in my head 10 times before I let anybody rip out my big toenail. That, even with two shots of anesthetic in my toe, pulling out my toenail, I mean, I was screaming. So they started pulling it out and it was excruciating. And I was like, no, 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 stop, 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 stop. And they stop and they look at me and they're like, what? And I'm like, leave it. It's fine. It'll be fine. You don't need to pull it out. And they like, here, look at it, look at it. So they make me sit up and look at my toenail, which of course is dangling by less than a thread. I mean, they said we have to pull it out. But I understand now why that was used as a form of torture in days gone past. Because the pain of having a toenail ripped out far, far exceeded the yuckiness of having my head shaved. I should note, I have long hair. My head, they had to shave a strip right along the top of my head. It was like I had a reverse mohawk.
Oh my gosh.
They shaved an entire strip along the top of my head and stitched me up.
Oh my gosh. Okay, so you had to shave your head.
Yeah, they shaved my head.
Oh my gosh.
To stitch me up. And then they bandaged me. I had lacerations along my knee. My left knee was just obliterated. My shin on the other leg had a very, very deep. It looked like you'd taken a spoon and just like scooped a bit of my leg out. And my ankles were gone. Then my left toenail got ripped out and my head was stitched. Now, as they're treating me, I'm in my little room and thank goodness we were the only people in the emergency room because I mean, I can only imagine how the locals saw me as this precious little foreigner screaming bloody murder. Meanwhile, a friend of mine, a dear friend of mine who ran a rum shop in Grenada, had seven children, and not once did she receive any kind of pain relief in the childbirth process. Because you don't do that in Grenada. You just pop them out. That's how they roll. I mean, she was in the hospital. They don't do pain relief, right? So here they are looking at me, screaming bloody murder. And there is no baby coming out of me, so I'm not even sure I had a good reason to scream, but I screamed. And
you don't think I had a good reason to scream?
My partner from the other room was yelling over at me, you know, it's okay, baby. It'll be fine, baby. You're good, baby. Be strong, baby. It's okay.
Oh, my gosh.
So then it came time for him to receive triage. Now, the first thing that they had to do was they had to relocate his dislocated femur, which was dislocated at the top.
And the femur is the biggest bone in your body because your thigh, right?
Yep.
So I had to reconnect it back into the hip socket?
Into the hip socket, which was fractured.
Oh, man.
So now it was his turn to scream.
I'm going to need a disclaimer at the beginning of this show, of this episode.
They had, I mean, everybody in the ER plus everybody else they could get had to hold him down. Because again, no painkillers, right? This is, they just
no
had to do it.
Killers.
And he did the same thing. He was like, no, stop. And then, you know, and they stopped for a little while and he said, don't do it. And they said, we have to. So similar to my toenail, this was difficult. And so I'm yelling from the other room, it's okay, baby. You got this, baby. You're strong, baby. It's okay. And we were one another's cheerleaders.
Oh, my God.
So the emergency room has done everything they possibly can to help us. And this is at the General Hospital in Grenada, which is also the study ground for a medical. There's a medical school also on Grenada. It's an international medical school. And they have a partnership with the General Hospital. That said, there were no medical students present for any of this. This was the doctors on staff that were taking care of us. So they've done everything they can in the ER. It becomes immediately evident that my partner is not going anywhere. He's going to be admitted into the hospital. And they tell me I can go home.
Really?
Yes. And I was like, come again?
You can't walk.
Yes. Exactly. And they said, you can go home now. And I said, but now, I mean, I hadn't even thought about the idea that I couldn't walk because I was still sitting on the table. I'm thinking about my head and I'm thinking about concussions. You know, I always grew up thinking when you bump your head, so you need to be monitored. Head wound, especially as bad as the one I had, surely they would need to keep me for a night and monitor me.
Yeah.
And when I said that, they looked at me like I was from the moon. This was obviously well beyond the scope of anything that they would provide. So, okay.
Wow.
And my partner and I lived in a very, very local part of the island. There was, to say I stood out, it was an understatement. But there wasn't a lot of infrastructure around. So our friend who had seen us in the accident and followed us to the hospital, thank goodness was still waiting, because as they literally, basically they carried me to the entrance of the ER because I could barely walk. And then they just kind of dropped me and my friend came and kind of took one arm and his girlfriend took another arm and they shuffled me to the car and then they drove me home where I was alone.
The hell?
Now, there was a fellow who lived downstairs and I had his phone number and I called him and I told him what happened and he said, okay, thank you for telling me anything that you need. You let me know. I'll drive you anywhere you need to go. I'll do anything I can to help you. So I knew that at least I had, you know, if something went horribly wrong, I had someone, you know, my neighbor downstairs had my back. And I got home and it would take me 20 minutes to walk 10 feet. It was excruciating. And I thought, I got to call my mom.
Oh, no.
So I send my mom a message. No. And by this point, it's late on a Friday night. And I send my mom a message and I say, hey, Ma, can you Skype? Now, she immediately knows something's wrong. We get on the phone and she sees me and she starts crying.
Ugh.
And I said, I just want you to know I've been in an accident. I'm okay. The neighbor downstairs is taking care of me. My partner's in the hospital. I can't really walk, but it'll be fine. And Mom said, why are you home? Why aren't you in the hospital? And I said, they don't do that here. That's not how they roll.
Oh,
and she said, well, gosh, would you like me to call you every hour to make sure? Because that's one of the concussion techniques that, you know, we've always known is, well, wake someone up every hour so they don't fall into some coma while they're sleeping through the night.
Yeah.
And I said, you know what? No, because if I don't answer for whatever reason, there's nothing you can do. And I don't want to put you through that.
Oh, my gosh.
I'll call you when I wake up in the morning. So I do wake up in the morning. Spoiler alert, I'm still here. But thank goodness I didn't get her to call me, because I only later realized that in the accident, the ringer on my phone was damaged. And even if she had tried to call me, the ringer would, it, my phone wouldn't have rung.
Oh.
So thank goodness for small blessings there.
She would have freaked out.
Yeah, exactly, right?
She would have jumped on a plane to come like try to find you.
Yeah, and that, oh, and that wasn't going to be possible either for a variety of reasons. So yeah, challenging to say the least. Now, what was even more challenging was waking up the next morning and trying to do things like go to the bathroom, eat. When I started projectile vomiting, I started to think maybe there was a problem. And that was one of the symptoms of concussion, right?
Oh, my gosh.
So I stagger down to the neighbor downstairs and knock on his door, and I said, I need to go to the hospital, please. And where he took me was the private hospital. And this is the hospital that most foreigners who have any preconceived ideas of going to a hospital will go.
Right.
So, and of course, the level of care on walking into this private hospital, which of course I would pay for, in comparison to what I received in the ER, was, you know, it was kind of night and day. I mean, they immediately saw me coming and, you know, brought out a wheelchair and, me in the wheelchair and wheeled me around these glorious facilities that they had, cracking jokes with me and being delightful the whole time, put me through a CAT scan immediately. I mean, like literally within 20 minutes of going into the place, they put me through a CAT scan and then shared the results with me. Realistically, I didn't spend that much. That visit, including the CAT scan, was $200, which, you know, if you were in the States and you walked in with what I had going on and to get a CAT scan, I mean, you it'd be thousands of dollars. In Canada, you'd be lucky to get a CAT scan within, you know, a month. So
Yeah, fair enough.
I was pretty impressed with this level of care and the cost thereof. So I was pleased. They told me to come back in and that they would remove my stitches for me when the time came. And they gave me some tips for taking care of myself. The upshot was I was okay. There was no brain damage. There was no terrible concussion to speak of. Probably, if anything, my projectile vomiting was just the sheer magnitude of my situation kind of coming upon my emotional being.
Yeah, like the shock, like settling in.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, absolutely.
My gosh.
So from here on in, the story is varied. My partner woke up the next morning.
He's still in the other hospital.
He's still in the other hospital, which, let me tell you, after a month of being in that hospital as he was, he woke up the next morning with a rod that had been surgically inserted through his leg, the shin of his leg. And to each end of this rod was attached a string. And on each end of these strings led to a pulley at the end of the bed, at the end of which was a bag of sand. This was traction. And he stayed in this medieval form of traction for 1 month to allow his hip to heal. Now, I would have thought it'd be a little easier to slip a boot on his foot and hold his leg up that way, but apparently surgically inserting a rod and attaching it to a pulley with water or sand on the end was how they roll.
Oh my gosh. It sounds like a scene out of Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde. Like, it's like you're creating a monster. Like it's like Frankenstein. Like, who does that?
Yeah.
I mean, oh my gosh.
It was terrifying.
This segment is brought to you by the book, How to Get Free Accommodation Around the World, by none other than Nora Dunn.
In all of my 12 years of traveling the world full-time, I saved over $100,000 on accommodation. And I had incredible culturally immersive and rewarding experiences in so doing. I also stayed in beautiful spots around the world, so getting free accommodation does not mean sacrificing on style, and there's lots of different ways to do it, from volunteering to house sitting to hospitality exchanges, living on boats, and home exchanges. In my book, I talk about all five different forms of free accommodation. I show you how to get gigs, I show you how to stand out and create profiles that will put you in demand, and if you happen to be running an online business, I talk about doing that concurrently to getting various forms of free accommodation, because some are definitely better than others in terms of getting free accommodation. It's in its third edition now, and all for the cost of a cheeseburger. You can learn all these different ways to get free accommodation, and it will pay for itself in less than one night on your next trip.
You know, I'm blown away by this story. I mean, it's really incredible. Like, holy smokes, I'm completely like, wow. I think we got the ship on course, but I'm actually more amazed, and not to take anything away from what happened to you and your partner at the time, because I mean, that's pretty significant, but I'm shocked at the difference between the level of care between the hospitals. I'm completely blown away by that difference. Like, that's crazy. Like, running out, bringing a wheelchair for you, you know, and private. Like, when we hear private, we think like, oh, well, this is gonna wreak havoc on my insurance and my credit card, right? But I mean, holy smokes, like the difference between like what they were using in that hospital compared to the private one. Like, wow, like nothing is more like obvious about the differences. Like, it's just shocking, the difference, like the level of care for people. Like, aren't we all humans? Like, I don't understand. Like, holy smokes, man. Like, wow.
Well, you know, Grenada is a developing country, ultimately. I mean, it treads the line. It's more developed than other developing countries by far, but in other ways, it is antiquated. And considering this hospital was associated with a medical school, an international reputable medical school, certainly blew my mind, given the standard of care that we received and that I watched my partner receive for the rest of the month. I mean, the general ward was awful. It was really hard to see because I was there every day bringing him food and because it was, you know, and there were, listen, I don't want to get too far into the things that happened in the general ward while we were there. But suffice it to say, you don't want to end up there. And this is yet another reason to have travel insurance. And one of the things that you do when you have travel insurance is before you get any care, if you have any ability to call the travel insurance company before you end up in a hospital, you call them, you tell them what's happening, and they will tell you where to go. More often than not, they will tell you the hospitals that not only provide a standard of care that is in line with what that insurance company is able to provide, but also the hospitals that they have and medical institutions that they have relationships with and then can thus put together a payment plan with. Now, the interesting thing is the general hospital, I never got a bill from the general hospital. And I'm not sure my partner did either, or if he did, it was a fractional bill, given the fact that he underwent multiple surgeries and spent a month in the hospital. So there's some aspect of that hospital that was subsidized. But certainly in a country where the quality of medical care is questionable, I always say go private. When we talked about hospital trips and about dengue fever in Thailand, we spoke a little bit about that and about the benefits of using a personal private hospital and the necessity for travel insurance. So once again, there is a plug: get travel insurance. Making the claim is another thing entirely, but get the insurance.
Trust me, we've heard. I just finished recording an episode the other day where was she? She was in, was it Guatemala? But her hospital bill came to the tune of $12,000.
Wow.
And so, but you know, again, she had insurance and she's from Netherlands, and her Dutch insurance was like some of the best type of insurance that you can get. They would check in with her, make sure she's okay. They covered everything. Like, you know what I mean? It was really good. And I think she was paying €8 a month or something like that. right?
Oh, wow.
So, I mean, well worth it. I mean, of course, there's different plans, but well worth it. Anyways, you slice it. But yeah, so insurance for sure. Definitely, you know, if anything from this show, if that fact is going to be driven home. But what you bring up, and I've heard this, I've had Kasia, as you know, Kasia, I've had Kasia on the show as well, and she was in a hospital in her story. And she also mentioned the difference between private insurance and regular insurance. And she also mentioned what you mentioned as well. So I'm going to bring that up again. It's a very good point. So having insurance is one thing, but knowing which hospital you need to go to is the other thing, which is very important, because insurance sometimes will only cover certain hospitals,
yes,
and they will only recommend certain hospitals that you go to in order for things to work out. So you very well could go to a hospital that's not covered by your insurance. And furthermore, you kind of want to go to the hospital that your insurance is recommending, because hopefully they would have already vetted that hospital. So that's the reason why they have a deal with them or something, or a contract with them or whatever it is. So you bring up a very good point. So it's important to get insurance, but it's also important to kind of like have your insurance information and numbers and stuff like that handy, so you, yes, can make a call and be like, look, this is what happened. What do you suggest? Because I'm in the ambulance now. Am I going to which hospital should I be going to, or whatever? You know what,
exactly,
I mean? Like, just like, yeah, figure that stuff out, because you might as well go to the right place.
Exactly. And that is a great tip. And that's something that I do, is I always have the policy number, the insurance company name, and the phone number of the insurance company written down in my wallet at all times.
Yeah.
And totally. That it's very important, because you never know when you're going to have to make that call.
Right. And of course, some of the other tips, I mean, the obvious ones, but, you know, going head on collision with a car, I mean, that's not something that you could really avoid, because it involves another person. So you can't, sure, necessarily control their actions. Right. But yes, you could have been wearing a helmet. I mean, obviously that would have helped in some situation, mm-hmm, but still, I feel that the level of your accident, though, I mean, aside from road rash and obviously you hitting your head on something, you still would have been like pretty banged up either way.
You
and
know,
he
I
still
was...
would have had his pelvis crushed even if he was wearing a helmet. So you, yeah, know what I mean? So, I mean, but still. And I understand, you know, you're in, I know, I understand it's difficult. As I said before, I have a motorcycle. I haven't ridden it in a while, but I have a helmet. I understand. I know what it's like to have the beautiful wind blowing through my dreads. Mm-hmm. I love that feeling. But when it's like, you know, Toronto humid weather, mm-hmm, like ain't nobody want to be wearing a helmet on, mm-hmm, their head. But we have to, because it's the law. But there, I mean, you know, it's tricky, because, you know, do you wear it or don't you wear it? I mean, I totally get that. It's not a law, so it's not the rule. I mean,
Well, and also a scooter seems really kind of docile. It's just like, oh, it's just a scooter, you know? So yeah, I'm in the road, but it's a scooter. It's, you know, well, what can I do? It's not like an Evergo, like so fast that I would, you know, you start to feel, you know, you get this kind of inflated sense of safety because it's, yeah, just a scooter,
right,
which of course is not true. But I will tell you, yes, I was banged up. But if I look at where I fell, about 4 inches to the left of me was a gutter. And the gutters, the drainage, basically it's a drainage pit at the side of the road that's lined with a hard concrete post.
Oh my gosh.
4 inches to the left, and I might not be here to tell the story.
Are we talking like impaled by?
I would have broken my neck, I'm sure. Because if I had tumbled the wrong way into the side of that drainage gutter, yeah, who knows? Who knows what could have happened?
Oh,
so, you know,
gosh,
there are so many, wow, silver linings. You know, yes, I was banged up. Yes, it was a hard experience, but yes, I'm okay. Yes, I had a great story to tell. And the last silver lining that I want to leave you with, because I do like to try to leave things on a positive note,
of
is
course,
my friend that I told you about that had 7 babies, she ran a rum shop in Grenada. So her rum shop was, it was equally as remote as where I lived, but it was probably about a 40, 45 minute walk from my place to her rum shop. She would walk to my, she would close the rum shop and walk to my place with food.
Ugh.
And keep me company twice a week.
Oh my gosh. Beautiful.
She, with seven children and a rum shop and a deadbeat husband, would walk 45 minutes to my place with food and give me company. So there is, and the neighbor downstairs, I mean, he took me, I mean, I don't, I started to feel bad about how often I had to knock on his door to take me around.
Yeah.
But he always did it without question and immediately. There was a sense of community, you know, even though I was definitely an outsider, by that stage, I had lived in that community long enough that they took ownership of me and they took care of me. And my initial terror at the idea of being stuck alone in this very remote part of the island without transportation or any, like the ability to survive, really, was quickly quelled because the people rose to the challenge. And that's one of the things that I've really appreciated about living in smaller communities around the world, as I have in my 12 years of full-time travel, and also living on islands, because an island is unto itself a community. And I've experienced this on islands all around the world, small and large.
Wow. I'm getting goosebumps from that. I love that that little ending. That she would come. That's beautiful. Absolutely beautiful. Oh my gosh. Wow. What a crazy story. Oh my gosh. I love it. I mean, I don't love that happened to you, but I mean, but I mean, that's brutal. Oh my. And you know what? There's certain parts that are going to come back to me, after I hang up with you, but, just the fact that they were realigning or trying to get his femur bone back into the socket that's damaged without any kind of medication. The fact that when they sent you away from the hospital, they never gave you any kind of medication either. Like,
oh no.
And so you had to literally live with that pain.
Mm-hmm.
That's probably why you threw up. But I mean,
it was,
oh my
gosh.
Yeah,
I fell off the toilet in at the moment that you really don't want to fall off a toilet. I mean, I was a mess in the first few days after the accident. It was really difficult.
Now, I remember reading the blog post and you started like a whole journal about it as you progressed through the whole getting better phase. So what was that like? Like getting better. And I mean, I know you touched upon it because you've mentioned some people that were really there for you. But how long did it take for you before you could literally be, you know, well enough to kind of walk on your own and be kind of self-sufficient again? And also your partner at the time?
So somewhere around the month mark, I was well enough to leave the country. Which okay. I did, because I flew to the States to visit a friend of mine who would be able to take better care of me and where I could also get a second opinion on what had happened. Because there was certainly on my partner's behalf, there was going to be an insurance claim against the other driver. So a third party insurance claim. And it was worth looking into whether or not I had a viable claim as well. Because, of course, I couldn't work. I couldn't move. I couldn't take care of myself. My income was lost. And if I demonstrated it, well enough and proved it with the proper x-rays and things that were never done for me, perhaps I would be able to get some money out of the deal. Spoiler alert there. I had to walk away from that whole process. It was actually emotionally damaging for me making a third party insurance claim like that is nightmarish by all accounts. Eventually, I mean, it is this accident, by the time everything totally rolled out, this accident, you know, a year later, I was no longer with my partner at the time. You know, whether the accident was kind of the catalyst, the beginning of the end is, you know, conjecture. Yeah. But there were a lot of reasons why I just had to walk away from the whole thing. So I never saw any money out of, the third party insurance side of things. But I did go to the States. So it was a month before I could properly walk and really properly walk and take care of myself and travel. But even so, I got to experience, which I'd never experienced before, the assistance that you can get when you fly.
Oh, wow.
Because when I shuffled up to the check-in counter, and I had a short connection as well, and in Miami, and I knew I was really worried about making this connection because at the pace that I was, I still was walking at a shuffle at best.
Yeah, yeah.
And I didn't know if I was going to make the connection at the speed that I tend to move. And so I shuffled painfully up to the check-in counter and checked in, and they said, would you like some wheelchair assistance for the flight? And I was like, do I want assistance? And I said, no, I think I can get to the plane, but I'll just need some time. And she said, yeah, but what about in Miami with your connection? I said, oh, yes, please. So someone met me at the plane with a little placard with my name on it. And I got wheeled at high speed through the terminal, through all these kind of secret passengers that only airline employees get to use, and delivered to my next gate in glorious time. So, that, you know, again, another silver lining, I guess.
Wow. Oh, my gosh. This is such an amazing story. Wow. Okay. So... Where can thank you so much for sharing that. I your stories, I mean, honestly, your stories are the kind of thing where you just need to just grab like a bowl of popcorn and just sit down and enjoy the ride. like that's I mean, side note, that's usually what happens whenever we go out for beer or something, or we come after an event or something and we hang out and chit chat. Like, this is usually what it's like. Just sit down, hang out. You know.
Just wind her up and let her go. See where we go tonight.
We'll end up someplace good, I promise. But I mean, what an amazing story. I've been really waiting for this one because I did read a lot about it on your blog. So I was really looking forward to hearing this story. And it delivered.
Did I deliver? Good.
Totally delivered. Wow, amazing. So thank you so much for sharing. And where can people find you?
I can be found online at theprofessionalhobo.com. From there, you can navigate to my YouTube channel, which is Nora Blue Skies, or Facebook or Twitter. I've been getting into Twitter lately. I've been like having conversations and doing things on Twitter. So, you know, tweet
me. I noticed.
Yes, for better or worse. I'm Hobo Nora on Twitter. I'm The Professional Hobo on Facebook. And I'm boycotting Instagram, but don't ask me about that because we're out of time.
we talked about our reasons on episode 15. Oh my gosh. Thank you so much. So there's only one more story left. Episode 35. And that story involves passports and crazy kind of stuff that's happening. And so I'm really looking forward to that story as well, actually. That was on one of my top list of stories to kind of listen to. So I'm looking forward to that one. So thank you, Nora. Thank you so much for coming back and sharing the story with us. You are awesome. This is so much fun. Can't wait to hang out again in a little while.
Well, thank you. It's a pleasure as usual.
All right, case closed. That's it for this episode. I hope you enjoyed it. Don't forget that you can listen to the show over at www.travelhorrorstoriespodcast.com. And if you're listening on your mobile device, please take a second to give the episode a 5-star rating and leave a comment. It really helps the show and its episodes get discovered by more people. Plus, your feedback will help me tweak and change the show to make it the best show on earth. I'll catch you next week. Cheers.